7BR Part Heard.
Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. We're joined today by 7BR member Susanna Johnson, who's here today to discuss, as part of our pupillage series, her experience at 7BR and life as a senior junior. Susanna is a highly experienced multidisciplinary barrister who undertakes family proceedings, civil cases arising from sexual and physical abuse, and public inquiry work. Susanna also practiced in criminal law for 10 years. She specialises in claimant personal injury work based on recent and non-recent sexual and physical abuse in institutional settings such as schools, places of detention, and care homes, and in the context of the care system. Her family practice sees her appear in the High Court in complex public and private law cases, acting for parents, guardians, and local authorities, and for parents in international child abduction cases. Susanna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Rhys.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's going to be a pleasure having you on. We, as I was just saying, are here to discuss your life at the bar, where it began, how it progressed, where you are now, and sort of the ups and downs, the good and the bad. So, as always, the best place to begin is at the beginning. Could you just sort of explain to us how you got to law and why you chose to become a barrister?
Okay. I didn't have ambitions as a child to become a lawyer or barrister or solicitor. I went to a state comprehensive school. My first degree was in English. I was being encouraged at that time to go into teaching, but having been to a pretty rough inner city school, that didn't really appeal to me at the time. After school, I worked at the School of Oriental and African Studies for a while. And after some thought, I decided to try for the bar. Looking at why that was, I think I some of it was for practical reasons. I wanted a career that would allow me to be financially independent. I thought about some of my personal characteristics and some of my background, which I'm happy to go into. But the path was that I travelled for about a year. I applied for an undergraduate law degree at the University of Kent, and that went well. I enjoyed taking part in moots. And after that, it was really a matter of trying to see whether I could get into bar school. Once at bar school, trying to obtain a pupillage, because even when I qualified back in the 90s, it was always known to be a bottleneck. It was always known to be difficult and competitive. So I had to think about a plan B, but fortunately it did work out. And I was offered a pupillage at 7BR, as it is now. It was 9 Bedford Row when I applied. And after pupillage, I became a tenant.
And 7BR, it's always been a multidisciplinary set, has it not? And do correct me if I'm wrong, you initially started, or the first few years of your practice was predominantly in crime?
Yes, that's right. I mean, we all had to mix in the beginning, as I did. I've always done some family work, but it's fair to say that fairly swiftly, once I was able to specialise, and even before then, my criminal practice really took off and it dominated, really, both prosecution and defence work.
So crime wasn't necessarily your intended area to go into. You sort of, as I think we hear quite a lot, fell into it, shall we say, and was possibly, very likely, very good at what you were doing, which is why it established as much as it did.
Yes, I didn't necessarily want to specialise in a particular area. I had an open mind, but it soon became apparent to me that I prefer a balance of court-based work and advisory work. But of course, that's why a lot of us want to apply for the bar, because we want to be advocates. And I think that's one reason why crime worked for me. I enjoy dealing with people. and it sounds a bit cliched, but the human interest sort of stories and the ability sometimes to in any area really to be creative, to look at who is the person or the body that you are representing, and what is using the law, the narrative that you can put forward to the court about your client. And so it was that room to be creative and to advocate that really, I think, led me to my practice areas where I am now.
So as I introduced you, I said you now have a PI practice and a family practice. When did that switch from crime to this other area, these other areas happen? And sort of what was the reasoning for that?
Sometimes practices can develop organically. You know, sometimes people come in and they have a very clear idea of their path. And sometimes it's serendipity. It's something can happen. You get a brief that takes you in a particular direction. And I would say probably I fell into the latter category. But also, as I said, I'd always done family work. I had PI experience. But when I had my first child, which was in 2007, I needed to reflect on the practicalities of what was a Midlands practice as far as criminal work was concerned, for the most part, not exclusively. I continued with that, but then my second child, who was born in 2010, was a very sudden end to the pregnancy. I wasn't well, I had preeclampsia and I had a very premature baby. And to quite a significant extent, that influenced my thoughts about what I could practically do next, because I wasn't going to be in a position to simply hand over this baby to a nursery, to a nanny, because he had a number of particular special needs that really required parents, well, certainly me, to be there. And so family work, certainly my experience then, I'm not sure what it's like now, but that there was a bit more of a possibility to have a say or not to lose a case when cases are being fixed for trial. Whereas my experience in crime, as I say, it may be different now, was that if counsel's not available or if you're not available and a case was listed, it's just too bad. Whereas with family, I certainly felt that there was some ability within appropriate boundaries to keep hold of cases. But also, Paul Eales, our senior civil clerk, suggested that I have a look at abuse work, because a lot of crossover with the sort of issues that crop up in some criminal cases and some care cases, which is what I do. So I took his advice, I had a look at that, and I went off and read up about the very particular and distinct area of historical abuse, non-recent abuse, and I was fortunate enough to get some instructions, and then that picked up.
So just going on with that vein, just the abuse work that you do, could you just tell us a bit more about what they are, how they run, and if somebody was looking to get into that area, what they could expect to be doing either early on in their careers or later on in their careers?
That's quite a big question. The reason I say that is because it falls into different categories. I will say there have been some recent changes in the law, in liability in relation to the duty of care, because you've got different causes of action. And if the cause of action is negligence, in a setting where you're talking about a local authority, for example, not removing a child from an abusive home in good time, those cases are not the easiest or the most straightforward. So I won't speak in detail about that, but that can be quite a challenge. If you're talking about individual cases where somebody's suffered abuse in an institutional setting, for example, young offender institution, a school, then the causes of action are the same as they are in other areas covered by PI, which is negligence. But then you've got the additional cause of action of assault. So it is really about what has happened to an individual. Can they prove it on the balance of probabilities? And if so, what damages are they entitled to? So all of the standard principles that apply in most personal injury cases apply there, whereas assault is slightly different, but it's still comes under the civil umbrella. In terms of acting for such clients, obviously it goes without saying you need to be sensitive to it. People can be very damaged, and sometimes they're adults coming to see a legal team for the first time. They might not have spoken about something that's happened to them at all in childhood. So we've got to be very, very careful to approach clients in a sensitive way. And of course, that often requires expert evidence.
And just again on this, I'm thinking of now the pupillage application process. You've just mentioned that you have to be very sensitive to the clients, and that sounds like there's a lot of soft skills and personable skills that you need to have to work in the area that you work in, the abuse work. If you were to give some advice to an applicant, how are they able to demonstrate sort of these types of skills that you think are transferable when working in the areas of work that you do?
I would say those soft skills probably apply to many areas, not just to abuse. I think they apply to criminal work, actually to clinical negligence work and to family work. I mean, it's to remember that the often you are dealing with an individual who is distressed, and it's the combination of skills. Obviously, it's the legal work, it's the legal ability. I think don't worry too much about it. I don't think you necessarily need to have done work where you're dealing with vulnerable people. I would suggest people think about their own backgrounds. There may be examples from within one's own family. When I came to the bar, people didn't speak about this sort of thing. But one of my probably pieces of experience that might have helped me was that I have a close relative or had a close relative who suffered very serious mental illness. It's not something that's spoken about very much, but when one does start to speak about it, there's a lot of that sort of difficulty in many, many families. And obviously being sensitive to not identifying people, one doesn't have to do that. But if you've got experience from your own life, in your own background, dealing with others in a sensitive way, even if it's just listening to them, that is a skill and it's relevant.
Suzanne, I understand you're a pupil supervisor here at 7BR. When we are talking about the training that our pupils receive, could you just explain sort of how you are involved in that and the support that our pupils can get?
Okay. They will get a thorough grounding in as many of the areas we cover as we can. I mean, we do civil and we do criminal, but obviously under those two areas, there's a huge amount. But in very broad terms, the first part of the pupillage will be civil, and you will follow your pupil's supervisor to court and in conferences. Pupils will be given a thorough grounding in paperwork, in procedure, in ethics. And of course, at the same time, if there are mandatory courses that the pupil needs to undertake with their IN, for example, they'll be given time to do that. There are regular advocacy exercises, and in fact, our most recent pupils had one not just last week. And those are really important sessions because the pupils will be given something to argue. They'll be given a scenario, but it's fairly formal in that it takes place in front of people who are tasked with assessing them and then giving feedback. And that happens throughout the pupillage. So we hope that the pupils can take that feedback and they can improve where necessary and pick up tips. The second part of the pupillage is obviously when a pupil has got advocacy rights. That tends to be the criminal side, and pupils can get fairly busy. But there is also an option for pupils to cover something like family work. And that's something I've been able to offer this year, because during the first part of the pupillage, the first 6 months, that person might not have had an opportunity if they've been doing a lot of personal injury work, if they've covered some employment work, if they've covered some clinical negligence cases or commercial cases. And during all of that, pupils will also have the opportunity to do pieces of research work for individual members of chambers. So the idea is that they really have breadth and depth as far as pupillage is concerned, so that they are ready on day one of being fully qualified as a barrister to step into practice.
One other aspect that I wanted to talk to you about, and you've already touched on it slightly here, is sort of equality and diversity at the bar. Now, you've already told us that you've had two children and you had those during your career. How were you able to maintain your practice? And I know you explained that our senior clerk, Paul Eales, who we'll be hearing from in this podcast series, helped you and gave you a direction when it came to transferring from criminal into family. But what sort of support was there either from the bar as a whole and particularly at 7BR?
Right, starting with the bar, for, and this doesn't just apply to people who become parents, it's apparent for people who have other commitments. They may be carers, they may have other things going on. I think what's really important is that the Bar Council and my inn, they do offer workshops and opportunities to speak to other barristers about how they have done it. And in fact, I think one that I attended some years ago now was some people who were talking about taking a complete career break. They had children, they didn't do anything, and then they came back years later. I didn't do that, but the fact that this is spoken about as something that you can do really does make a difference, because obviously we're self-employed and it isn't necessarily straightforward or easy, because if you don't work, you don't earn. But I think in terms of general support, there are now, it's much easier to get advice about it, to think about planning and what you should do. In terms of chambers, we've got a really good maternity policy. That really helps, because you have a rent-free period. You can take time out and it's not going to count against you in terms of coming back. I mean, that comes with a caveat in that obviously if you disappear from practice for a time, then you may not be as visible to solicitors as you were. But that's where the clerking team comes in. And that's where, well, speaking for myself, it's been really important to be able to have open discussions with somebody like Paul and say, these are what my needs are. This is my situation. And I had fantastic support, but also from senior members of chambers, from senior juniors and from silks, both male and female, who will encourage you to think about how do you want to shape your practice? How do you want to make it work for you? Because I'm conscious, as many others are, that there is something of an attrition rate amongst women at the bar, because sometimes people decide, you know, they just can't manage all of it. And I don't say it was easy, but I was able, certainly with my youngest, to not work as many times in the week as I once did, to do paperwork, to work from home, and to communicate when I was ready to increase my workload, or if something occurs, if a crisis occurs, as it did with my second pregnancy, which was a call to Paul at 5 p.m. on a Friday saying, I can't do that High Court case on the Monday. I've got to have an emergency cesarean. And a good clerk like Paul will not, you know, worry about it and take it off your hands and say, don't worry, it's fine, which it was. But I think that if I had to give one thing to take away on that issue, it is communication, which means that before you set out what you need, before you speak to clerks or anyone else, you need to really think about how you want it to work, because everybody's different. Some people would wish to spend, you know, quite a bit of time at home with their children. Some people are desperate to get back to work and they've got arrangements in place for a nanny or a nursery from when their child is 6 months old. So it is an individual decision. It helps to have a supportive partner as well. But I hope that I and others in chambers are evidence that you can be a parent. It doesn't mean the end of your career. And if you've made as much effort as you can to build up good working relationships with your instructing solicitors and they know that you're coming back, when you start to come back, not when you're back, but before you do, you can prepare. You can take the advice of clerks. There will be opportunities to come to networking events and continuing professional education events. We have quite a few of those in chambers. So just because somebody's on maternity leave doesn't mean that they're shut out from chambers. You know, you can be invited to things. You can still participate. And that's helped me a lot.
Well, thank you for that. I think that was quite a helpful response to a lot of our listeners who will be considering whether or not they'll be able to maintain a career and have a family at the bar. Just finally, before we go, is there anything that you would like to give to the prospective applicants? Final piece of advice, a short snippet of what you would have liked to have known when you were applying?
That's difficult because I think one develops from the start of your career and into you know, being a senior junior like me. One is always learning about people, obviously about the law and about advocacy. So be flexible. Try and be fit, try and get enough sleep, because you do need a degree of resilience. And I suppose third, don't think that you are the only one to whom, you know, something, a challenging experience has happened. Don't be afraid to ask for help, to talk to someone senior in chambers, because it's a profession on which, you know, the buck stops with counsel a lot of the time. And that does create some pressure. But please don't forget that you can ask people for help, and there is a real degree of camaraderie. Obviously, better to speak to somebody in your own chambers, but don't be afraid to ask for help. And, you know, be fearless, you know, work hard, but also try to have a work-life balance. Rest is as important as application, I think. So try to get the balance right.
Well, thank you, Susanna. It's been a pleasure having you on today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you to our listeners. If you enjoyed this week's episode of our Pupillage series, join us next week where we'll be hearing from our senior clerks, Paul Eales and Stephen Wright, who'll be talking to us about clerking and building a practice. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.